he's taken on this role from his father. I blinked at this, and then remember Tom mentioning a couple of weeks back that Sanders came from a family that made its money from defense contracts. I suppose this meant he'd come back into the fold in the last few weeks. "Pleasure," McDonald said. "This is Tom Stevens, my aide, and Jamie Gray, who will be your liaison during your stay." Sanders pointed to Tom. "You look familiar somehow," he said. "We overlapped at Dartmouth," Tom said. "I was a couple of years behind you." "Wow, isn't it a small world," Sanders said. "Speaking of which," he turned and faced me, "look who this is." "It's me," I agreed. "You know Rob?" Tipton asked. "Jamie was one of my executives at Food Mood," Sanders told him. "Oh, you must have been very pleased at your stock payout when Uber bought your company," Tipton said to me. "Alas," I said, looking at Sanders. "I wasn't there when it happened, and didn't own any stock when it did." Tipton chortled. "Bet you regret that now." "Well, I did get a 15% discount at Duane Reade, so it wasn't all bad." Tipton pointed at Sanders. "This one just became a billionaire from that. If I had his money, I'd be on the beach in Cancun with a big fruity drink in my hand. This one went back to work for his dad." "To be fair, I was on the board of Tensorial when I was CEO of Food Mood," Sanders said. "I still kept a hand in. And now I'm here." "Yes, sweating our asses off," Tipton said. "This place hasn't gotten any cooler since the last time I was here." "No, I suppose not," McDonald said. She pointed toward me. "Jamie here will be in charge of your stay here, so anything you need, you can just actually..." "And I apologize for cutting you off here, Dr. McDonald," Tipton said, "and this is how I learned that Bryn McDonald had a doctorate in something. I've been tasked with getting a comprehensive overview of the Kakasuwak event." "The what?" "It's what we're calling your exploding kaiju on the other side," Tipton said. "I've been tasked with getting a comprehensive overview of the event as quickly as possible and returning as quickly as possible." He nodded to Jones, who reached into the bag he was carrying and presented McDonald with a clipboard with paper on it. "Here are the things we'll need to be briefed on. We'll need to have those briefings today." McDonald took the clipboard and passed it to Tom without looking at it. "We have a full suite of briefings scheduled for tomorrow." Tipton shook his head. "Apologies again, Dr. McDonald, but we have to be back on our way tomorrow morning." He held a hand up, anticipating the objection she was about to make. "This isn't me pushing you around and disrupting your schedules, I promise you. This is coming from my bosses, and also from their boss, and from his boss, all the way up." "I don't understand," McDonald said. "It's not like we haven't had kaiju go up before." "You have," Sanders said, "but they're not visible from Canadian airspace." I remember Neve pointing out the flash that the Canadian drone was able to spot from the air, corresponding to where Bella was sitting on our side of the fence. "It's not a threat," McDonald said. Tipton smiled. "You're probably right about that, but it's only a matter of time before it gets spotted by a commercial flight or tourists." "There are tourists in Newfoundland in October? In a pandemic?" I blurted out. "Or by residents nearby," Tipton said, looking at me, displeased. He was less thrilled about being interrupted than he was with interrupting. "And with no disrespect to your people here, Dr. McDonald, not everyone back home is convinced that a pregnant kaiju squatting on the barrier between our two worlds is not a threat." "I'm sure you are right, but I need information to convince others. And I need to have it today because I'm expected at the White House early Monday morning." "The White House," McDonald said, skeptically. "I'm reporting to the chief of staff. He'll fill in his boss as necessary." McDonald nodded. "Tom here will set up the meetings for today, then." "Thank you," Tipton said. "And when can we see the site?" McDonald looked at me. "Martin's ready," I said. "We were going to take up one group as soon as possible. As soon as possible, might as well be now. Colonel Jones will stay behind to police our luggage and to coordinate with Mr. Stevens here," Tipton said. "All right." McDonald looked over to me again. "They're all yours, Jamie. See you all in about 90 minutes. She and Tom and Colonel Jones headed off, with Jones already pointing to things on the agenda. I turned back to my charges. "You've been in helicopters before?" "Of course," Sanders said. "And you?" I asked Tipton. Tipton gave me a look. "I'm a Major General in the United States Air Force." What do you think? Not too far off from the site, and while Satie and Tipton, who was in the co-pilot seat, were talking incessantly about helicopters, Sanders tapped me on the shoulder, took off his headset, and motioned at me to lean in. I took off my headset, was immediately reminded how much a pair of good aviation headphones blocked out helicopter engine noise, and leaned in as well. Sanders said something. "What?" I said. Sanders got closer and pretty much yelled in my ear, "I said I hope there are no hard feelings about me firing you in March." "Really? You're doing this now?" was what I thought, but I did not say. "It's not what I had hoped out of that performance review," is what I did say into his ear, once he had turned for me to yell into it. This is how we would have our conversation. Clearly, Sanders didn't want the others to be privy to it. "I can understand that," he said. "But you landed pretty well. I wouldn't have minded having the stock payout. The stock buyout was only for the Class A stock. You and most employees had Class B. They were just swapped over for Uber stock. So I wouldn't have been a millionaire. Not unless you were one already. Does that make you feel better?" "Not really." "This is better anyway," Sanders said. "And actually, I'm jealous of you. You get to be here every day. This is only my first trip here."
"But you knew about it before?"
Sanders nodded. "Tensorial and its predecessor companies are invested in nuclear energy technologies. Ever hear of a radioisotope thermoelectric generator?"
"Radio what?"
"It's a type of nuclear power generator. We make them. KPS uses them."
"We do?"
"Not at your base. Other places. Point is, we've been working with KPS for decades. My dad told me about it when I was a kid."
"And you believed him?"
Sanders shook his head. "Not at first. Too wild, right? But then I realized it was real. I told him I wanted to see it."
"What did he say to that?"
"He said when you make your first billion. So I went and made Food Mood."
"You did Food Mood so you could come here?"
"Dad made me a deal. Food Mood could have been a failure." Sanders smiled at this. "It was never designed to succeed. It was designed to sell." "I don't know what that means." "When you start up a company, you can do it to dominate a sector, or you can do it to cause someone else so much pain that they buy you out. I made Food Mood to cause Grubhub and Uber Eats pain, and one of them bought me out for billions." I considered what this meant, and how, cynically, Sanders had designed his company. Then I remembered the suggestions that I had given him in the meeting where I had been fired. He used them, which was bad enough, but he also used them just to annoy someone else to pay him to go away. My sole attempt at business genius worked only to antagonize another company into buying a competitor that had no real interest in competing.
"Well, aren't you a massive prick?" I said, quietly, under the roar of the helicopter.
"What?" Sanders asked. "I said, that's a nifty trick. It's the art of the deal, my friend." I did not say the next thing in my brain, and instead changed the subject. "So, why did you fire me?" I asked. "Now that we're here and it doesn't matter."
"It wasn't personal," Sanders said.
"You remember Kenesha Williams?"
I nodded.
"She and I were talking about the pandemic and how it was going to mess with the economy. She said she hoped it wouldn't be too bad. I said it was so bad that even people who had good jobs that week would be signing up to be deliverators next week. She didn't think it would happen. So I made her a Duke bet."
"A what?"
"I bet her a dollar. You know, like the Duke brothers in Trading Places." I racked my brain on this one.
"The old Eddie Murphy film?"
"Yes. I made her the bet. And then I told her to pull up the employee directory, and I picked 10 names at random. Then I called them into my office and fired them."
"Including me."
"Sorry.
Kanisha put up a fight for you, you should know. We were friends, I said, and we had been. That's what she said. I told her she could take you off the list if she replaced you. She didn't. I wouldn't have wanted her to, I said. I knew Kanisha was supporting more than herself on her salary. So, then I swore her to secrecy, and I told her that if half of the people I fired were deliberators a week later, I'd win the bet. And? Sanders looked smug. 6 out of 10. You must be proud, I said. I just understand people. Do you? Before Sanders could answer, Tipton waved at us to put on our headsets. We were close to the site. Do you think the pilot will let us land and walk around? Sanders asked me, before we put on our headsets. I wouldn't bet on it, I said. Want to make a Duke bet on it? Not really. I'm going to try anyway. Watch this. He put on his headset, then quickly took it off and leaned in again. What's the pilot's name again? Martin, I said. Got it. The headphones went back on and he patched back through into the intercom just as Bella became visible, looming in her nest. Well, that's a hell of a thing, Tipton said, looking at Bella. And she's been there for 2 weeks now, just sitting. Not just sitting, Satie said. Making eggs. The first run of eggs are going to hatch in the next week. Lots of little kaiju going to be born, eat their brothers and sisters, and then run off into the woods. Then she'll make more eggs. She'll do that a few times before she's done, and not move a muscle while she does. She doesn't have to move. She has all her creatures to move for her. How close are we going to get to her? Tipton asked. Depends on your nerves, General, Satie replied. Tipton chuckled at that. How about you let us get out and look around? Sanders said. I don't recommend that, Satie said. Why not? Jamie knows. I landed here with some scientists about a week ago, and one of them almost got eaten, I said. I don't mind the risk, Sanders said. That's easy to say when you're not being chewed on, Satie said. I'll pay you $10,000 to land for 5 minutes. Do you have $10,000 on you? In cash? No. Then no, Satie said. And anyway, what would $10,000 do me here? Kaiju Earth is a socialist paradise, Mr. Sanders. $100,000, Martin, Sanders said. Wired to your accounts at home the minute we get back. Satie turned and looked at Sanders, who looked back, a small smile on his face. He was sure he had just found Satie's price. Satie turned back to his instruments. Sanders turned to me as if to say, see? The helicopter dropped violently. If we hadn't been strapped in, we'd have been on the ceiling. Satie took us all the way down and nearly put us on the ground, hard, before he stopped, hovering inches above fallen trees and new green. Satie turned back to Sanders. All right, out, he said. Sanders looked around. We were still a distance from Bella. What, here? Here's as good a place as any. Well, if I'm paying $100,000, I want to be close to her. Sanders pointed toward Bella. I'm not taking your money, Satie said. I'm just letting you out. I don't understand. I know you don't. Get out. Sanders glanced over to the co-pilot's seat. General Tipton, you're not talking to him, Satie interrupted. You're talking to me. He's not going to say a goddamn word. He's not in charge of this mission or this aircraft. I am. And I'm telling you to get out. Sanders was visibly confused. I don't see what the problem is here. You insulted me, Mr. Sanders. Offering you money is an insult? You didn't insult me by offering me money. You insulted me by thinking I could be bought. Sanders blinked silently at this. He clearly didn't understand the distinction. I looked out the window. In the medium distance, away from the wash of the rotors, creatures were looking in the direction of the helicopter, curious about it, wondering if it might be food. When you made your first offer, I was willing to let you pass it off as a joke, Satie said. You're not the first billionaire I've ferried around. I know how you all like to wave around your money, Dick, to see who might be willing to suck on it. If you had let it go when I gave you the opportunity, I was willing to ignore it. But you had to push it. You wanted to see how much it would cost for me to compromise the safety of everyone on this aircraft, me included, to assert your dominance. So, now, here is my answer, Mr. Sanders. I will let you out for free, and there is no amount of money on this planet or the other that you or anyone else could pay me to let you back in. Sanders gaped at Satie, then looked at Tipton, then at me, then out the window, where, I believe, he saw the curious creatures for the first time. Now, out you go, Satie pointed to the door. Sanders looked back at Satie. I've changed my mind. You still don't get it, Satie said. It's not your mind you have to change here. Martin, Dr. Satie, if you please, Satie said. And this is how I learned he had a doctorate. I very briefly wondered if, in fact, I was the only one on this whole planet who did not possess a terminal degree of some sort. Sanders gathered himself up. Dr. Satie, I have clearly offended you, and for that, I am profoundly sorry, he said. Please accept my full and unreserved apology for what I said to you. I accept it, on the condition that, for the entire rest of this trip, I do not hear a single goddamn peep out of you, Satie said. Not to me, not to General Tipton, not to Jamie. You just sit there, Mr. Sanders. Do you accept? You can nod if you do. Sanders nodded. Well then, we have a deal, Satie said, and turned away from Sanders. Now, let's go look at a big damn creature, what do you say? He lofted us back into the air and back toward Bella. I looked at Sanders, who was pale and sweating. Damn, I thought, I could have won a dollar. Chapter 18. The tour of the site over, it was time for things to be explained. Here's a thing I'm confused about, Rob Sanders said, at the first of the briefings we had set up for him, General Tipton, and Colonel Jones, with our scientists and staff. If Sanders was showing any residual psychological damage from being humiliated by a helicopter pilot a couple of hours earlier, he wasn't showing it now. The resiliency of the billionaire ego was truly something to behold. We know that the kaiju, the big ones, have, organic nuclear reactors, but when we were flying over Bella today, looking at the field of eggs, it occurred to me that I've never heard of baby kaiju having the reactors in them too. Do they? Yes and no, Aparna said, because she was the one gathering the data from the nesting site, and this meeting was ostensibly about that, she was the one from the biology lab leading the briefing. Aside from her and the tourists, the briefing included Bryn McDonald and Tom Stevens and me. We were holding it in the very small conference room in the administration building. It was a very cozy meeting. In addition to my role as visitor liaison, I was also, once again, supervising snacks. That's vague, Sanders said, smiling. This got a head shake from Aparna. Not vague at all. Yes, because even at a very early age, even as an embryo in the egg, there are certain precursor structures in the kaiju body that will develop into the reactor in later stages of life. No, because those precursor structures are not yet a reactor. There are other things that have to happen first. Like what? Tipton asked. Certain hormonal changes to start. The kaiju has to hit puberty, Sanders said. If you like, Aparna said, in a tone that suggested that she didn't, in fact, like. It would be incorrect to imagine kaiju development being an exact analog to mammalian or even earthly vertebrate development, however. It's much more complex than that. Sanders nodded. Tell us how, please. All right. As just one example, the nuclear reactor development is not only contingent on the age of the creature. That's where the puberty metaphor goes wrong, but also contingent on parasite load. If a kaiju doesn't have enough parasites, or enough of a certain sort of parasite, then the nuclear chamber development doesn't happen. Tipton frowned. So these things don't go nuclear if they don't have the right sort of fleas? Again, if you like, Aparna said. But it's really more complicated than that. She motioned to McDonald. When I first got here, Dr. McDonald told us not to think of the kaiju as animals, and instead, to think of them as ecological systems in their own right. This is accurate in a way that's difficult to convey. The creatures we call kaiju parasites aren't all strictly parasites. Some of them are, but more of them are in a commensal relationship with the kaiju, while others are in a mutually beneficial relationship. And not just with the kaiju, with each other as well. In fact, there are some who have a commensal relationship with the kaiju, but a mutual relationship with other parasites. They live on the kaiju, but they survive with these other creatures. That's great, but what does that mean? Sanders said. It was clear Aparna was going over his head more than a little bit. Basically, if they don't pick up the right parasites from their environment, certain developmental stages can't happen, Aparna said. In the case of the nuclear chamber, a developing kaiju has to, among many other things, acquire the sort of parasite that acts as an internal cooling system from the kaiju, bringing in air from the outside and routing it through the kaiju to take away heat. Gaining those parasites creates the conditions that allow the kaiju to grow larger. Growing larger introduces stress on the developing kaiju because its ability to continue living through metabolic functions alone quickly decreases. That type of stress causes the kaiju body to release specific hormones and initiate other processes that, among other things, create and activate the nuclear chamber. And if they don't find the right parasites, then they don't become kaiju. Either they die from growing too large, they fall victim to the square cube law. Sanders frowned here, which I assume meant he'd never heard of that particular law. Or they simply stay at an earlier stage of development. It's not quite right to think of the massive kaiju as the only viable stage of the creature. They can live quite happily at earlier developmental stages for their entire life, where they are only as large as, say, an elephant or a Tyrannosaurus rex. Only a small percentage of all kaiju actually get to what we would consider true monster size. So if you want a kaiju, you need some parasites, Tipton said. Aparna nodded. And not only some parasites, specific parasites for specific species of kaiju. One of the really interesting things about Bella and Edward, the kaiju who impregnated her, is that they are in the wrong place. Their species is endemically from what we'd think of as Mexico and Central America. There are some parasites critical to their development that don't exist this far north, which means they had to have come here from the south as fully developed kaiju because they wouldn't have been able to develop here. What does that mean for their children? Sanders asked. Will they develop into full-sized kaiju? It depends, Aparna said. If Bella stays in the area as they develop, or if they can get close to Edward without him or some of his parasites eating them, then they might get those critical creatures from them and grow into large kaiju. If Edward and Bella leave, they'll stay at an earlier development level. Mind you, most of them won't even get that far. They'll get eaten, you mean? Yes, or they'll starve. The kaiju at every stage of life are predators, and the larger they get, the closer they get to their ecological apex niche. An ecological system can only support so many predators, and when you have a full kaiju in the area, things get even worse. Why? Tipton said. They're nuclear-powered. They're beyond eating. Aparna shook her head. They derive energy from their nuclear processes, but they still need things like nutrients for their biological systems. They still hunt. They hunt other kaiju. They hunt less developed kaiju, but more significantly, from an ecological point of view, they also have their legions of parasites, many of whom hunt, and all of them have metabolisms. A kaiju is a walking mountain of mouths. They and their parasites can and will eat their local countryside bare, or would if the countryside didn't fight back. It fights back, Sanders said. Oh yes, Aparna said. Everything here is ridiculously lethal, because all of it that's not a kaiju parasite has evolved to defend itself from kaiju parasites. Some things even prey on the parasites directly. It's constant war. Sometimes the countryside even wins and routs the parasites. And then what happens? Well, remember, the kaiju aren't animals. They're ecological systems, Aparna said. What happens when you kill off a critical part of an ecological system? Chances are good the rest of it dies too. It's this intense competition that makes this version of Earth so interesting from a chemistry point of view, Kahurangi said in the next scheduled meeting where he was briefing Sanders and Tipton in the latest from the chem lab. Everything is signaling to everything else, and most of it is some variation of leave me alone or I'll cut you. And this differs from our Earth how? Tipton asked. Kahurangi grinned. Volume, mostly. Everything is shouting here. So how do we shout back? Sanders asked. We don't shout back. We shout what they're already saying. I don't know if you've ever done any work on the jungle floor. Not yet, Sanders said dryly. Yep, he'd definitely recovered from his earlier moment. But one of the things we do is use scents and pheromones that mimic kaiju parasites, so everything will give us a wide berth. We were told by your associate, Dr. Chowdhury, that there are things here that kill the parasites, not run from them, Tipton said. She wasn't lying to you, Kahurangi said. But, just like at home, there are qualifications for that. Some creatures are prey to those parasites. They'll run away. Some want to prey on the parasite, and they'll come for a look. But, like all predators, they'll size up the situation. If it's too much trouble, they'll leave us alone. We try to make it too much trouble, but it's not perfect. He motioned to me. Jamie here just had a mission where a predator took its chance. We heard something along that line. Tipton turned to me. How did that go? Jamie shot it in the face, Kahurangi said, proudly, before I could answer. Tipton looked me over, reassessing. You don't look like the face-shooting type. We all have hidden depths, I said. So if we have the right chemicals, we can control these things, Sanders said, bringing things back around to the subject at hand. Control? No, Kahurangi replied. We don't talk in terms of control. Why not? Because these aren't people, and we're not talking to them. When these things smell the pheromones or scents, it's not like they're getting orders. They're getting suggestions. If we have a pheromone that's designed to invoke a fight-or-flight response, we want them to flee, and 90% of the time they will. But then there's that other 10% of the time, where they want to fight. And you can't perfect this any. Not really, Kahurangi said. And even if we could, there's still no way we could guarantee that they'd do what we wanted every single time. They're biological creatures, not machines. I mean, we can speak to other humans perfectly well, right? We don't have to spray them with chemicals or anything. We can just talk to them, and they can understand exactly what we want. Do they do what we want them to do every single time? Not always, Sanders admitted. There you go. Let me take this in another direction. Could we drug a kaiju? Kahurangi grinned. Do you want to get a kaiju stoned, Mr. Sanders? I don't want to do anything with one. I just want to know if it's theoretically possible. I'm sure it is, although as far as I know, we've never done it. Never? Well, I'm new, so I would have to check, Kahurangi admitted. But in a larger sense, again, these are biological creatures, even if they are mostly nuclear-powered. I'm sure you can create compounds that have specific effects on them. And for other creatures from here, too. Sure, although everything will react differently. Heck, there are some drugs that work on adult humans that don't work well on children and vice versa. Also, it would take a brave person to dose a kaiju, or even a kaiju parasite, to see what their invented pharmaceutical compound would do. You already do that when you spray them with pheromones, Tipton pointed out. Kahurangi grinned again. Yeah, but then we usually run the hell away. Is there anything in your current arsenals of smells and pheromones that can keep a kaiju in one place? Sanders asked. Bella is sitting right on top of a fluctuating barrier between our worlds. If she gets up, she might get up on the wrong side of the barrier. Kahurangi shook his head. No, he said. But as I understand it, Bella isn't likely to cross over, and she's acting to keep the other kaiju away. How so? Well, speaking of pheromones, ever since she's nested, she's been emitting a huge amount of them, and they all say the same thing to the other kaiju in the area. What's that? Tipton asked. Stay the hell away. And what happens if she does get up? Tipton asked Neve in the third briefing of the day, this one updating the two of them about current physics work at the site. You mean, is she coming through to our Earth? That is the concern, yes. Well, even if she could, and I'll get to that in a moment, the question is, why would she? Because she's a stupid animal that might lean in the wrong direction getting up? Sanders said. She's not a stupid animal, first off, Neve said. None of these creatures are. They're not intelligent. Of course they are, Neve said, in a tone that expressed disappointment that something so obvious had to be said. You don't think of Bella as intelligent because she's not playing the stock market or some other utterly irrelevant standard. But in fact, she's a perfectly intelligent creature within the context of being driven by her own needs. Right now, her need is to stay in one place and squirt out eggs. She has no need to get up, and the only way she will get up is if something bothers her. And anyway, if she does get up, it'll be to respond to something on this side of the barrier, like another kaiju crashing into her territory. The moment that happens, your barrier problem is on its way to being solved. That, Tipton said suddenly and pointed at Neve, that's what I need to know. Explain this to me. The barrier got torn when the other kaiju blew up, Neve said. It's just part of the release of that much nuclear energy. The thing is, no matter how large a hole you punch in a dimensional barrier, it immediately starts to heal up. Why does it do that? Sanders asked. Because the release of nuclear energy that thinned it out stops, and the surrounding nuclear energy starts to decay away. The barrier heals up in a predictable manner tied to the ambient nuclear activity in the area. Unless more energy is added, it will eventually close up entirely. But this one's not closing, Tipton said. Right, because you have a big, damn, living, breathing nuclear reactor sitting right on it, Neve said. Bella's nuclear-powered, and that energy is keeping the barrier thin, or at least thinner than it would be. But the moment she moves, then her energy moves away with her. Neve nodded at Tipton. And even now, the amount of energy she's adding into the mix isn't enough at this point to let her punch through. Maybe it was in the first few days when the ambient radiation levels at the site were still high enough, but it's been weeks, and those levels are way down. She's keeping the barrier thin, but not enough for her or any other kaiju to get through on their own. But what about that flash? Sanders asked. See, that's really interesting, Neve said animatedly. I thought the flash was a brief tear between our worlds where something might get through. But then we got some instruments in there. Turns out that what's happening is that as she sits there, feeding energy into the barrier, something akin to a static charge is building up. And at some point, something happens to agitate it, and all that static energy just goes pop, and it discharges on both sides of the barrier. Sanders paused at this. It's static electricity? No, it's something much weirder, Neve said. We've never seen it before, because we've never had a kaiju sit still near a nuclear site long enough to have it happen. And since I am the first to describe its nature, I am calling it the Healy effect, and one day when I can actually publish it, I will get a Nobel Prize, and all the other physics postdocs at Trinity will just have to suck it. That was quite a journey you just took us on, Sanders said, smirking. Let me have my moment, please, Neve replied. I just want to make sure I understand you, Tipton said. The barrier between our worlds right now is thin, and this kaiju is feeding energy into it, but it's not thin enough for this or any other kaiju to get through. And if any other kaiju comes along, she will move to fight it, and in doing so, remove the energy that's keeping the barrier thin. That's right. But could it open up again? Sanders asked. Enough to let her through? Not unless she goes nuclear herself, Neve said. And there's no evidence she's at risk for that. So it would take a nuclear blast, is what you're saying. Neve thought about it a minute. No? But effectively, yes, on this side of the barrier, since we don't have any concentrated fissionable material over here. But if Bella goes up over here, that will solve your problem entirely. She's dead, and the other kaiju only cross over if the nuclear explosion is on the other side. That's just weird, Tipton said, almost muttering to himself. What is? Neve asked. How something over here can sense something back home. How there's an alternate Earth, and the way we discovered it was through nuclear bombs. Neve smiled. Mate, if you want your noodle really baked, then think about this. Any time we play with nuclear energy, we're thinning the dimensional barrier not just between our world and this one, but with every potential alternate Earth and our own. Tipton frowned. What? Every single one of them, Neve said. Millions. Billions. Trillions. How do you know that? Neve shrugged. It's just math. Then why do we only see this one? Neve grinned even more wildly. You're going to love this. Because, as far as I can tell, it's because our two Earths are the only one with nuclear creatures. The kaiju got there naturally. We used our brains. Then why did it take a kaiju coming over for us to realize this world existed? Sanders asked. Because we think we're smart, Neve said. Come again? We think we're smart, Neve repeated. And because we think we're smart, we only looked at what we wanted to look at and didn't think to look past it. We were looking at creating nuclear bombs and didn't think about how nuclear energy might mess with the multiverse. We didn't consider there was a multiverse. It's not built into our model. And the kaiju did consider this, Sanders said skeptically. Of course not, Neve said, the I can't believe I have to say this tone returning. They didn't consider anything like that. It never occurred to them to create a model of a universe where alternate worlds would or wouldn't exist. They just acted intelligently within the context of their needs. They sensed a food source, and they moved toward it. They didn't consider that it was across a dimensional barrier. They came through to our world because it never occurred to them that they couldn't. Chapter 19. I have a couple of questions for you, if you don't mind, Bryn MacDonald said to General Tipton after Neve had finished their presentation and headed out, and we were coming to the close of our meeting schedule. Of course, Dr. MacDonald, Tipton said. I was curious what your takeaway is and what you'll be reporting back for a start. Tipton glanced over at Sanders. I think it's clear your people know their stuff, he said. This wasn't really in doubt. KPS always finds good people. But this is an unusual event, and you can understand why back in the real world we would have some concerns. It's been decades since a kaiju came through, and the world has changed in the interim. To have one just sitting on a barrier? It's a security issue, or so it would seem at first. And you think it's less of one now, Tom Stevens said. I do, Tipton pointed. Let me be clear that these presentations need to be backed up with data that I can share with my scientists back home. If they come to different conclusions from the data, I will let you know. And bluntly, I'm not going to be happy about it. But you've never fudged the data before. I'm not sure why you would start now. Thank you for the compliment, General. You're welcome. Of course, Dr. MacDonald, you would do us all a favor if you could find some way of getting Bella to move so that breach can seal up entirely. Spray her with some pheromones or something. You do that sort of thing all the time. We thought about it, Tom said. But since she's not in danger of crossing over, we decided it's not an issue. Also, brooding kaiju are touchy. Touchy? Sanders asked. Bella would rip apart any other kaiju she felt was threatening her eggs. If one of our helicopters goes in and tries to get her to move, she's going to see it as a threat and try to destroy it. And she'd likely chase it until she did destroy it, which would risk leading it back to Tanaka base. We'd like not to get stomped by Bella, MacDonald said dryly. So we think it's better to let her stay where she is for now, Tom continued. We have those cameras and equipment monitoring her, and we do live observations with the helicopters as well. If something happens that we need to worry about, you'll know. How much longer is she there for? Sanders asked. Until she stops producing eggs. She's due to lay more soon, and she'll probably have another session after that. So, weeks?
Months? Probably another month, at least. I understand you're curious about these creatures, Mr. Sanders, MacDonald said. Of course, Sanders said. Enough so that you tried to bribe my pilot to land near Bella, MacDonald continued. You do understand that Dr. Satie filed an incident report not long after you landed, as he's obliged to whenever something unusual happens on a flight. Sanders looked uncomfortable, but not unduly so. He was back on land and in a conference room environment, which was his usual playing field. Dr. MacDonald, I realize now that I let my enthusiasm get away from me. Yes, you did, MacDonald said. Please tell me why. It's my first time here, Sanders said. Seeing this, seeing all of this, I got carried away. It was wrong of me, I'm sorry. MacDonald looked at Sanders levelly. You understand your family has a less than shining reputation with regard to Tanaka Base. Sanders appeared confused about this. I didn't, actually. In the 60s, as the KPS was getting underway, your grandfather pushed your company's radioisotope thermoelectric generators as a way to power our bases, including the first version of Tanaka. There was a report noting the kaiju here seemed especially attracted to that version of RTGs and would go looking for them, but his counterpart at the time, MacDonald nodded to Tipton, approved it anyway, in no small part, because your grandfather bribed him. Would you like to guess what happened next, Mr. Sanders? I'm guessing a lot of kaiju visitations? Yes, including the one with a defective reactor that destroyed the base, MacDonald said. The old Tanaka base was by the water, and kaiju with defective reactors often try to get to water, maybe as a way to cool themselves down before they go critical. This one went to the water, and then went to the base. Even in the middle of a critical event, it couldn't help looking for what it thought was food. Dozens of people died, Mr. Sanders. Ironically, those RTGs are still there, under the rubble. Not active, of course. I don't know how to respond to that, Sanders said after a minute, except to say, I'm not bribing General Tipton. I can vouch for that. I still have a mortgage and school tuition for 3 kids, Tipton said. You've never struck me as the bribeable type, MacDonald said to Tipton. Thank you, Tipton replied sardonically. MacDonald turned her attention back to Sanders. But we know you are the type to bribe, just like your grandfather. So, one more time, Mr. Sanders, tell me why you tried to bribe my pilot to let you land. Dr. MacDonald, I swear to you that it was just personal curiosity, Sanders said. He sighed, exasperated. Look, I know I can come across as an asshole sometimes. Just ask Jamie. He pointed at me. All eyes swiveled in my direction. Yes, he can, I affirmed. If I remember correctly, I told him so the day he fired me. Yes, thank you, Sanders said to me, then looked back to MacDonald. I was in smug asshole mode earlier this morning. I got called out for it. Fair enough. And also, I've learned my lesson. Being a smug asshole here doesn't fly. Literally, in the case of your helicopter pilot. I'm sorry. I can promise it won't ever happen again. MacDonald stared at Sanders, and then looked over at Tipton. General?
Well, having spent the last 2 days with him, I can vouch for him being an asshole, Tipton said. I can also say I was as taken by surprise by his request as your pilot was. I have no reason to believe it was anything other than a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Jamie? MacDonald turned to me.
Huh? I said, because I am just that smooth.
Martin says he saw you and Mr. Sanders conversing privately in the helicopter just before he attempted bribery. What was the conversation about?
A thought occurred to me, and I filed it away for the moment. It was about trading places.
MacDonald looked confused.
About the two of you trading places?
No, I said. There was a movie called Trading Places. It's from the 80s.
The Eddie Murphy flick, Tom volunteered. That's the one, I said.
And you were talking about his movie Why? MacDonald asked. It was just part of the conversation. Rob's a big Eddie Murphy fan.
MacDonald looked over at Sanders for confirmation.
It's true, he said. Early Eddie, not later Eddie. Although Dolomite Is My Name was pretty good.
And you talked about nothing else, MacDonald said to me.
Before that, we talked about Food Mood, which was the company he founded and that I worked for before he unceremoniously fired my ass, I said. He was trying to tell me that firing me wasn't personal. What did you think about that? Tom asked.
Well, I suddenly had no job and no money and spent the next 6 months delivering food in the middle of a pandemic. It sure felt personal.
Did you tell him that?
I looked at Sanders. I mean, he already knows I think he's an asshole.
But McDonald nodded.
All right, she said. She turned back to Sanders.
Congratulations. You've had your one strike, Mr. Sanders.
You get no others. Step out of line again, annoy or interfere with any KPS staff again, and I don't care how much money your family has or what your connections are. I'll make your life miserable. And you will certainly never come back to this side ever again. Are we clear?
Yes, Sanders said.
Thank you. Sorry.
Good. McDonald looked at her smartwatch. We have a couple of hours until dinner, so unless there's something else you need, General, I'm going to suggest we break. I would be delighted to have you and Mr. Sanders here accompany me for the meal, if you're willing.
That would be wonderful, thank you, Tipton said.
McDonald nodded. 6:30 then, she said. I'll have Jamie come collect you at your quarters. Everyone got up and exited the room, except me, who still had to clear the refreshments. I cleaned everything up, put them on my dining cart, and headed out the door toward the dining hall. Along the way, I saw Tipton and Sanders standing there, talking. I navigated my way toward them. I could see Tipton being animated and poking Sanders in the chest in a pointed way. Tipton saw me coming up, stopped his conversation with Sanders, nodded to me, and wandered off.
Everything okay? I asked Sanders. I'm being chewed out by everyone today, he said.
I nodded. What did the general say?
He was telling me that what I did today was the stupidest thing he's seen a civilian ever do on this side of the fence, and also that the KPS doesn't care whose son I am or how much money I have. You guys can always find other billionaires to fund you because you have fucking Godzillas, and nerds with cash will line up at the door for that shit. Fucking Godzillas is an actual quote, by the way.
I'm sure it is, I said.
Probably also nerds with cash.
You would be correct.
Sanders smiled ruefully.
So, yes, not my best day.
It's not the worst thing in the world to be served up some humility, I suggested.
I don't know about that, Sanders said,
and then remembered something. You lied in there today for me.
About what we talked about before I offered the pilot money.
I didn't lie, I said. I was merely selective about our conversational topics.
Why did you do that?
Why shouldn't I?
Well, for one, you think I'm an asshole. You are an asshole, I confirmed.
But after a certain point, I think the beatings made their point. Beyond that, it's just piling on. I think you get it.
I've certainly learned things today, Sanders said. This place isn't like I expected. Anyway, thank you. I nodded again.
What's your plan now?
Got me, Sanders said.
It's not like you have a lot of activities here. I might go back and stare at a wall until dinner.
Why?
Well, I said, it's fair to say you've had a disappointing day, yes?
Yes, so?
Let me make it up to you.
How?
Let me deal with this, I said, motioning to my cart. Then, let's go for a walk. Are we going to get in trouble for this? Sanders asked as we tromped down the stairs to the jungle floor. We could have taken the elevator, but several weeks constantly schlepping things around the base, plus 6 months of delivering food to East Village walk-ups, meant stairs were not an issue for me. Sanders was beginning to look a little winded, however, and this was us walking down.
Not at all, I said. If you had stuck to your original schedule, I would have taken you down here tomorrow anyway. Since you chucked that schedule, this was no longer on it. I'm just putting it back on.
Maybe we should have told Tipton, Sanders said.
Nah, he's been here how many times before? I think he's probably seen this bit.
We got to the landing, and I stood before the bolted door. For you, this is all new. Ready?
Ready, Sanders said, panting. I unbolted and opened the door, turned on the screamer I had in my pocket, and we went out onto the jungle floor.
This is amazing, Sanders said, looking around.
It is, I agreed.
Is it safe?
Safe is a word we don't much use here, I said. But this is as safe as it gets. Just, you know, don't wander off too far from me, please.
Sanders grinned. You're my bodyguard, then.
Something like that, I agreed again. We wandered out some distance from the door, toward the trees. As we got closer, I reached into my pocket and turned off the screamer. About 10 seconds later, the first crab popped around a tree and pointed its antennae at us.
Whoa, Sanders said.
And then the jackass actually reached out to the thing. I turned the screamer back on and the thing scuttled away.
Did you see that?
I did see that, I said.
What are those?
Tree crabs is what we call them. Not very imaginative, I know.
Are they dangerous?
They're venomous, I said. In the time since my first encounter with them, I learned that tree crab venom is mostly harmless to humans. It's painful, and enough of it will make you miserable for a day, but it probably won't kill you. It's one reason why Ryu Tagak used them to scare the shit out of new people. I wasn't telling Sanders that at the moment, however. So I probably shouldn't have tried to touch one, he said. I turned the screamer off. You do you, I said, and motioned toward the tree, where the crab had scuttled back around again. This time, Sanders backed away from it and slightly away from me as well. I quietly took a step in the other direction, away from Sanders and the tree. Careful, I said.
Why?
They travel in packs. I pointed to the tree on which three more tree crabs had scuttled into view.
Okay, I think I've seen enough, Sanders declared. He wasn't taking his eyes off the tree crabs, who, to be fair, weren't taking their antennae off of him.
I took another quiet step away from Sanders and the tree.
Rob?
Yeah?
Why did you want to land out there at the site, I asked.
Really, I mean.
I already said why, he said. More tree crabs had appeared at this point, and they had begun chittering among each other.
No, I said, you lied about why. And when they asked me, I deflected enough that they believed your lie. But I know you're lying.
Yeah?
How do you know that?
Sanders looked at me when he said that, and one of the tree crabs took that opportunity to scuttle down the tree to the jungle ground. It tapped the ground gingerly with one leg, as if testing it for solidity. Sanders caught the movement out of the corner of his eye and brought all his attention back to the tree full of crabs.
Because you wanted to make one of your damn Duke bets about it, I said.
You went in confident that you could get Martin to do what you wanted, which means to me you probably planned it, which means you had a plan.
That's a lot of supposition, Sanders said.
Okay, have it your way, I said, and then turned to walk away. Behind me, I heard a soft plop. One of the crabs had dropped off the tree and was now fully on the ground.
Wait!
I turned. Sanders spared me the briefest of panicked looks. By this time, three of the crabs were on the ground, and one of them had begun walking at a very casual and measured pace toward him.
This is just between us, he said.
Despite myself, I had to admire his need to try to bargain while he was, or so he thought, on the verge of being eaten.
Go on, I said.
I wanted to get a sample, he said.
I frowned at this and noticed the crab nearest to Sanders was now within jumping distance of him. I flicked the screamer on and off.
The crab stopped and reared, confused.
What do you mean you wanted to get a sample? I asked.
I brought a syringe with me, Sanders said. I told them it was for my insulin.
You're diabetic? I asked, pulsing the screamer again.
No, I just told them that.
Where's the syringe now?
It's in my pocket.
I pulsed the screamer.
Show me.
Sanders fished into his jumpsuit pocket and produced a sealed package that included a syringe and needle. It was very small. I laughed.
What? Sanders said. You weren't going to get that into Bella, my dude.
Sanders looked annoyed, or as close as one could be to annoyed while panicking.
It wasn't for Bella.
The tumblers fell into place in my brain.
Ah, I get it.